Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 16. SA Futures up 106. This is after a big pop-up, but Apple is only up 10. It was up 16, but it still is a huge move. Earnings weren't that hot. Revenue wasn't that hot, but they said they're going to buy back $110 billion worth of stock in lieu of, well, they did increase the dividend a little bit, but the dividend is minuscule compared to the stock. So they're going to do the stock buyback, and everybody's very, very happy. So it's good to be happy and that kind of stuff. And what can you say, Ricardo? We have Mr. O'Neill, Mr. Kevin.
Yeah, I'm happy. What can you say? Hey, that If I Had $1 million song, doesn't that need to be re-recorded with an inflation adjustment?
If I Had $1 billion.
Yeah, about right.
Or $100 million. You can't. By the way, Kevin,
They can make a video with it too.
Yeah. By the way, very quick little lesson. Obviously, when you get these guys that are trained in monetary theory, guys like me, we talk one way, and you talk to listen to everybody on TV. They talk something else. It's like they deny this again. Turkey came out with a announcement today. Their inflation accelerates to nearly 70% in April, okay? But the fine print is, if you go back the normal way of looking at this, okay, Turkey's inflation accelerated to 69.8% annually for the month of April. Now this, you know, I'll say categorically, I mean, I never give absolutes on stock because I don't know any absolutes on stock, but I know absolutes on this kind of stuff. This idea of using this annual stuff is crazy. You want to take the month or the last couple months or the last 3 months and extrapolate them out because that's what your inflation is. You know, if you look at this on a monthly basis, Turkey's consumer price index increased 3.18%. All right, so now you might say, wait a minute, 3.8%, 3.18% times 12 does not equal 69.8, does it? Or is my math wrong?
Well, there's the new math. You know?
There is the new math, yeah. So, immediately, which you're not supposed to do because money supply doesn't matter anymore. If you listen to the lady who's on, what's his name, Biden's economic advisor, is that the new monetary theory, which is total BS. If you go to the Turkey money supply, you spot, in the last year, this thing went up like a mother, and now it's actually calming down a little bit. It's still going up because interest rates are like 50% over there. So, if you look at the last 6 months, it's like a 4% increase, which is somewhat where you would expect with the 3% per month. In the last 3 months, it's been from December to now, it's only up like a little bit. Okay, but now you might say, where's the fly in this ointment? Well, it was last year. Last year in April, I don't even want to know how many zeros this thing is, but it's get a load of this. It's 9.51 billion. That's the money supply. So the lira is worth like zero. But anyway, they went from 9.5 in April to 9.4 in May to get this 10.8 in June and 11.6 in July. So they went up like 20% in 2 months. Which obviously is 10% a month. That's like a lot. That's like 120% a year. So at the beginning of last year, their inflation was absolutely through the roof, and now because the money supply increase, it's still going up, which it probably shouldn't be. It's going up at a much slower rate, so they're down to 3% a month, which you could say they're making some progress. Now, what they did last year to cause that to spike like that, I don't know the history of Turkey, but whenever you see all these inflation numbers, just look at the money supply numbers, and they absolutely match up, Kevin. And yet, with the new monetary theory is, we don't go by that, right? So, just saying. So there. Anyway.
Okay, so we got all that math out of the way. Let's talk about fun stuff instead, then.
Yeah, what's fun?
Nothing.
One of my buddies
pick,
at the
local... Pick a topic and we'll make it fun.
Well, one of my buddies at the local bar, shall we say library, says that some guy from... Where can I say this? Without... somebody he knows at a very prominent high school here, very super football team. They're, you know, in the playoffs every year. Evidently, they the kid is signed up early to go to, I'm going to say, a where would you put like the Miamis of Ohio and those kinds of size schools, Toledo, and they're not.
Well, I'd probably put Miami of Ohio in Ohio, but.
But I mean, in terms of they're not in the Big Ten. I mean, where are they in terms of?
They're in the Mid-America Conference.
So
are you talking athletics here?
Yeah, and okay. what kind of revenues do you think they have? Anyway, that isn't the school, but it's a school in their conference. I'm not going to use the right name. What kind of revenues do you think they have? Anyway, the school that's in that conference flew this kid's mother out to school on a private jet as a recruiting thing. And okay. And I'm not so sure. I don't think it's the same kid, but one of the people from this big high school here in Chicago, they're talking $80,000 a month, Kevin. This isn't... The kid has no name, image, and likeness. He's just a football player at a high school. He has nothing on his own.
They'll put him to work on, you know, doing some kind of marketing things, but because they have to, you know, you got to perpetuate the scam properly. But it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, they're employees, and you know, we're just doing a workaround, of an employment situation. And it's preposterous that they're getting away with this at this point. And I keep saying this, and it's going to happen sooner or later. They're going to file a workman's comp claim, or they're going to do, you know, some kind of employment law challenge where they're going to go after these schools and say, I'm an employee of the school, because that's going to be where the deeper pockets are anyway, the easier pockets to reach into. And they're going to prevail on it, because they really are this idea that you have these collectives that are at an arm's length from the school, and they're not just the terms of compensation for playing football, is ridiculous. That's exactly what they are.
Well, I don't get how there's all kinds of different setups here.
So this is different from a Caitlin Clark or a Caleb Williams having individual advertising types of arrangements. You know, Caitlin Clark doing Nike, Caleb Williams doing his Dr. Pepper ads, those kinds of things when they're in college. That's different. The collectives, though, that are just paying a salary to everybody, are a different animal. And as far as I'm concerned, they are just the payroll department for the schools.
Well, we haven't gone over this in a while, so maybe we'll take a minute. I've kind of stumbled across maybe three or four different iterations of this. I mean, there's the tax deductible / charity model that says you and I would contribute money to some group from, say, Notre Dame. And they're a 403 something something, and we're going to have Ricardo go to a hospital two nights a week and talk to kids, and we're going to pay him $600 an hour for 4 hours a week or something like that, or 5 hours. And now we're going to try and duck into this is a charity because we're doing stuff for a hospital and we're just paying a guy to go do it. Now, obviously, it's income to Ricardo. I hope he would know that. I'm sure he would. So that's how that little scam piece goes. All right. Now, otherwise, if they ask you and I to put money in that's not tax deductible, somehow or another, it would have to be self-sustaining, you would think, that if we're going to put money into this, and you get me for $1 million, say, if I had $1 million to plop in there. So I did. I may do this once, but you can't hit me up every year. I mean, now if Ricardo is going to be going someplace, you know, to Joe's Chevy dealer or something, and he's going to get paid, you know, $5,000 for the appearance, guess what? I'm probably only going to give Ricardo two or three, because somehow I got to pay for the people here, and this thing has to be, there has to be some income here someplace, or else I have to hit these people up every year and it's not tax deductible. So that becomes sort of a marketing arm. So for Ricardo, who can't get his own thing like Caitlin Clark and the other guy, right? So now I become like a marketing service for somebody. But why would I do that for free? And how can I keep hitting people up for that money? So there's iterations of this, and then there's the everybody gets 50 grand whether you do something or not stuff. And then if you really want to get crazy, you could say, and this is the one I think you were alluding to, what if, you know, PTI was huge and I was at a real hair up my behind about Notre Dame football or Illinois football or wherever it is, and I'm going to hire Ricardo during the summer for the 3 weeks they're off. And let's say they get a week off at Christmas, which I'm not even sure they do if they get a bowl game. So, and he's going to, whatever, maybe he drives in on a Saturday or does God knows what. So I'm going to pay him at PTI. But my job, I'm going to say, Ricardo, your job is to show up here 2 weeks a year and to play football at Notre Dame or Northwestern or Illinois. Now, I'm essentially the employer, yet the coach there tells him when he has to be back and forth, and I don't know where that goes in the employment stuff. I mean, clearly what I pay him, I think, is going to have to be, he has to pay taxes on it. I mean, it's not tax-free. Now, that's kind of a mess deal, too. I can't think of any, you know, I'm not a genius on labor law. Where's little we need him? But I can't think of any other scene, and there probably was one somewhere, where the person who employs the person isn't the person that they actually work for. I mean, he's working for Notre Dame, right? Basically, on your football team. So I don't know how that even plays out law-wise. Do you?
I legally, no. I have no idea how it works out, and it's ridiculous under any circumstances. And like I said, you know, who and as you just said, he's really an employee of who? You know,
yeah.
So you know, you have to deal with that as well. It is just so bleeped up right now, I don't know how they're going to fix it. They'll figure. I mean, they will. I keep telling you. I think the major football schools are going to go off on their own, and when they do, they probably will make them into employees because. Because then what they get to do then is sign them to contracts. So now you can set up a 3-year contract so that people aren't, you know, or a 4-year contract or whatever it is. But you can set up a contract so that people aren't constantly leaving you. And that's what coaches want the control back. They're not looking out for the best interests of the athletes. They're looking out for their own best interests. And their own best interest is more stability in their labor market.
Well, it also comes down, I mean, I look at, and there's examples of this, and I don't expect, you know, everybody to zero in on this, the minutiae, like unfortunately I do, and maybe you do, Kevin. But let's say there's a school like Miami of Ohio, which has a nice program, or Akron or someplace. They're going to continue, let's say they do, they're going to continue to recruit high school kids, which is, a pretty serious nut, right, to do this. I mean, I got to believe every one of the schmucks that comes to Notre Dame has at least one ride in a private jet to get there or something, right, or maybe two, and maybe the family. Who the guy knows what the... I'm guessing, you know, you're closer to this than me. At the end of the year, they're going to get, what, 25, 30 football recruits maybe? 30 is the max? I don't know, somewhere.
Oh, I think it's 25 is the max in a class and 85 total.
But okay, so
they usually wind up with something like 21, 22.
Okay, so let's say 25, just for ease of calculation. What do you suppose the total cost of recruitment is? The people that are doing it, the air flights, the hotel rooms, all maybe they stay in a dorm. I don't know what they do, but I'm going to say it's let's be nice and say it's $1 million, which is probably light.
Per recruit?
No. So you divide that by 25.
Oh, okay, I got you.
So say it's, let's be nice and say it's 50 grand a recruit. I'm going to say that's probably light. All right, so you just invested 50 from this guy. Now, he's there. He's at Miami, Ohio, or Akron, or whatever. I'm going to call these guys feeder schools, and it might not be them. And they're going to teach this kid as a freshman. You know, go through all the freshman crap you do with people. He's going to have classes. His education list price is 50 to 60, all right, which is high, but still, let's put it in there. And if he gets hurt, you're going to pay for the doctor bills, you're going to do this, that, you're going to pay for the trainer, you're going to pay for all this stuff. Well, at the end of 2 years, he's off to, let's say, Notre Dame. And Notre Dame says, well, you know, why should we even do this high school recruiting crap? Let all these other idiots do that, and we'll just grab people in the portal after freshman and sophomore year. Well, somewhere along the line,
actually, there are schools doing that, but they are mostly the smaller end schools.
Okay, but
the lower level schools.
I'll bet there's a lot of schools that have cut their high school recruiting budget.
Oh, there may be, but yeah. I'm telling you, because I know of this, it is more the lower end programs that are they're just waiting to cherry pick off the guys who aren't happy with the playing time they get because there's too much talent at their schools.
Okay, so but to continue on with the baseball example, you're right. This kid is going to end up having some kind of a contract that doesn't resemble the contract right now. And for Notre Dame to grab this suddenly kid who grew tackle from Miami, Ohio, or Akron's going to say, you're going to have to buy this contract from us because he's under contract to us. By the way, you have to compensate us.
His contracts have buyouts. That's
but I'm saying you're going to have to compensate us for the 150 grand we put into this kid, and he's only played 3 games here. Now you're going to take the cherry on the top of the ice cream here. Well, that's cool, but it's not free. I mean, economics is an incredible science. It's not the science of me letting you know what Apple's going to do next week because that I can't do. Or me predicting the labor number today, which I can't do. But I'll tell you what, there's going to be some compensation in this portal, Kevin, because these other people feel they have an investment. Now, if somebody like Hartman played 4 years at wherever the hell he played, Wake Forest, they, to a certain extent, got their investment out of him. So if he goes and plays a fifth year somewhere else, I don't know if you can claim that one, you know what I'm saying? But clearly, If a kid all of a sudden grows as a freshman and sophomore, and now he's a star and wants to go to a bigger place, there's an investment in that kid that somebody put in, right?
Yeah.
So I'm saying economically.
And I don't know how it goes the other way when you have the guy who goes to Alabama and realizes he's not going to see the field, so he can go to Miami or he can, you know, in Ohio, but he could just as well go to, you know, a more of a bottom of the conference type of team, like, you know, go to a Pittsburgh or something like that. Because lots of guys do that, and I don't know what Alabama's claim is in that they certainly did the same thing with developing the player, but they weren't going to use him anyway. So I don't know what their claim's going to see. This will all.
But their point is, they're still paying.
Will eventually work out if they make the system honest. But this can't work out when we say they're just student athletes participating in an extracurricular activity who now happen to have this attraction to, you know, are attractive to some third party who is totally willing to pay them for their smile and winning personality. All of those, you know, all of those clunky outcomes that you describe are a result of what the current system is.
Well, but I mean, if you let's take the Alabama situation, and well, we've got to dash the break here pretty soon. Alabama, much as I can't stand them, Alabama has put out money for this kid. Okay, they probably at that level of a high school kid have found a way for him to get paid. Okay, somewhere. Now he's getting paid, and oh, by the way, he's getting his education. What that's worth with Alabama, I don't know what they charge. They're into him too, Kevin. So if he says at the end of his sophomore year, well, Saban's not the coach anymore, if he says the deal is you're supposed to learn here as a junior, you might be in the rotation as a senior, you're going to start, and he goes, no, I want to start next year, well, that's cool too. But it doesn't mean Alabama doesn't have. They may say, for your tuition and for the $80,000 a year we managed to get you for this new system, and oh, by the way, the recruiting, we're into you for 80 times 2 is 160, plus the tuition's 40. We're talking 240, plus the recruitment is another 50. We got $300,000 invested to you. And by the way, if you sit on a bench, you sit on a bench. You know, we're still not letting you go. That would be my argument from Alabama.
It's like every other employment arrangement, except that right now it's not.
Right. Well, I mean, you don't normally, when you hire somebody, pay them for not doing much for a long time. It to me, it's very similar to right now. If PTI hired somebody young, and they wanted not that we don't have anybody young, but and they said, well, I want to go to University of Chicago Business School, and by the way, I want you to pay for it. Well, I'm not going to do, I mean, in my era, when it was, you know, $6,000, I might say fine. But now that it's $140,000, I'm going to say, wait a minute, if I pay for this over 3 years, you got to give me 2 years or you give me half this tuition back, something like that, right?
Yeah, well, that was my arrangement when I went to grad school.
So mine, well, at Allied, we just paid, but then it was cheap enough, you know, at those numbers. I mean, you could have gone to what was DePaul in 1978? $1,000, you know. DePaul's a good place, something like that. S&P futures up 20, and Nasdaq futures up 119. Big dog here is Apple's up almost $11. It was up 16, so it's come down a little, but it's still up real strong. And they're going to buy $110 billion worth of stock. That's the thing that got everybody all crazy here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Well, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. This could be one of the toughest investment climates that I have ever seen. It's very difficult for someone to decide between risk-free investments like treasuries or CDs, corporate bonds at all-time low rates, or the stock market, which right now is somewhat unloved. On the other hand, if you have wealth, you are an investor and should be concerned about income and risk. Like everyone knows by now, the PTI Securities has a 14-year investment program called the Protect Index Program that has served our clients well for a long time. I think, however, that people associate that program with new cash investing, and that is somewhat true. What you may not know is that PTI also uses the same concepts and risk parameters to help clients with individual stock positions, especially a concentrated stock position. How many of you have your stock sitting in a brokerage firm where, if you ever felt the need for protection or income enhancement strategies, there'd be no one with a clue on how to help you? Are you really comfortable with those large concentrated stock positions? Ever think of talking about ways to possibly adjust the risk or income potential? It can only happen if that stock is in an account with a firm like PTI. Then again, I can't think of a firm like PTI, with the Chief and others averaging 15 years of floor trading. Give us a call or contact PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JAX. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjacks@live.com.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 20. Nasdaq futures up 119. Just after a huge update yesterday, which followed the most bizarre day when Chairman Powell was speaking the day before, where we closed flying down, and then we came up yesterday and ran up the whole year, the whole day. So, and then we had the Apple news on the close. So, I mean, it was a huge day. Dow futures up 290 again, $80 of that's Apple. Okay, but some other stuff is up as well. Amgen's up $37 as they seemingly got into this. Did well with his diabetes overweight drug type thing, so they got themselves involved in there. So those are the two stocks in the Dow that are pretty much carrying it on their own. We have over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 37. They did not trade. Okay, Hang Seng was open, They're up 268, 1.5%, 18,475. So they've got a big comeback from this like 16,000 number. Shanghai, they did not trade either. So the Nikkei and the Shanghai did not trade. We're in Europe. We've got the DAX up 71.4%, FTSE up 36.4%, CAC around up 40.5%. So moderately to the upside over there. Again, yesterday, Dow was up 322, S&P up 45, that's a number, and the NASDAQ up 235, 1.5%. So NASDAQ's come flying back from the, I had the QQQs, which is pretty much the NASDAQ ETF, was like 429 on Wednesday afternoon, flew down to 422, and now it's back up to 430. This is all in like the last 8 trading hours, so it's been crazy the last couple of days, and moves are very, very fast, too. They're not, you know, you don't get a chance to get much time in there. 10-year rates unchanged, 4.56. They're down a little bit since the Fed announcement. That's one of the reasons why this market's back up. A bund down one basis point, 2.53. Japan, 0.90, where it has been the last few days. Oil, down up 24 cents, 79.19, still under 80 bucks. Brent up 31 cents, 83.98. Natural gas unchanged, 203. RBOB up a penny, 261. We've got gold. Down $2, 2307, hanging, just hanging over 2300. Silver down 8 cents, 2674. Copper up 4 cents, 452. That's been the steadiest of the three in the last 6 months. We have foreign exchange. We've got the 107.4 against the euro, which is pretty much where it's been, and 125.5 against the British pound, again, kind of where it's been. Crypto down 145, and the Bitcoin still under 60,000, 59,052. Ricardo, over to you, buddy. A lot of stuff there.
What's up in the morning, Chief? It's currently 6:35 a.m. right here in Chicago. Beautiful Chicago. We got 61 degrees right now with a high of 63. Very nice today. Not too cold, not too hot. I love it. Cooler with a couple of morning showers. 60% chance of precipitation. Then times of clouds and sun this afternoon tonight. Partly cloudy with a low of 48 degrees. In Phoenix, we got 69 degrees right now with a high of 93. It's warm with sunshine, and tonight will be clear with a low of 68 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we're going to be 17 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 36 minutes. We got inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 28 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 24 minutes. On the sports in the MLB, you're going to love this one, Chief. The Cubs lose to the Mets 6-7 in New York. It's very sad. But today at 1:20 p.m., the Cubs versus the Brewers is going to be playing in Wrigley Field at 1:20 p.m. again. The White Sox and the Cardinals are also playing in Busch Stadium in St. Louis, Missouri today at 7:15 p.m. And finally, the Diamondbacks and the Padres are fighting off in Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona today at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Kevin, did you see the... they're having a hearing yesterday. You know, as you know, I'm not really all for these trials with Trump, but the matter of fact, I'm probably not. I think they're kind of crazy, but he's there for his gag. The hearing yesterday about the gag order, right, where he was lambasting some of the potential jurors or something or witnesses, and so the judge fined him $9,000 or whatever. So here, this is his idea of shutting up. Contrary to the fake news media, I didn't fall asleep during the crooked DA's witch hunt, especially not today. I simply close my beautiful blue eyes, sometimes listen intensely and take it all in. Is that like saying you're checking your eyelids for cracks or what?
Good marketer, isn't he?
that's a gag order? God.
This is your basic huckster. Yeah. Hey, I did say fun stuff, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, fun stuff would be... I saw yesterday, so I actually did a little bit of digging, that Notre Dame just got a commitment yesterday from a punter named James Rendell, who will join the team this fall. Rendell is a 23-year-old, 6'6", 225-pound, former Aussie, Australian rules football star who is kicking. And as you know, the Bears spent the fourth-round draft pick on the Ray Guy Award winner, who happens to be a guy named Torrey Taylor, who is also about 26 years old now after kicking a few years in
college, and he's an Australian, and he won the Ray Guy Award last year. The previous Ray Guy Award was a guy named Adam Corsack from Rutgers, who is also an Australian. And so the question is, what is going on here?
What is the
answer? There is an answer to that.
What is the answer?
The answer is that there is an outfit in Australia called Pro Kick Australia that is taking these Australian rules football athletes, teaching them how to be punters, using American football punting technique, and then arranging to get them scholarships in college and presumably a pathway to the NFL, where there happen to be like six Australian punters right now, six different teams, and if you get them a little older, but heck, a punter's career can last a really long time. You're not on the downside of your career at 30 if you're a punter.
Well, you just hope that the other guys make the tackle and you don't have to. Of course, if he played Australian rules football,
this guy supposedly that Notre Dame got has a average 5 second hang time, and has punted the ball as far as 80 yards in the air.
Well.
So,
do you
this is kind of an interesting little development that seems to have happened under the radar.
What is I've
well,
seen?
You know, the portal probably helped that. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, hey, I got a very simple question. I think all of us are somewhat akin to or know what rugby's all about, and those guys are big rugby players down there. But this Australian rules football, actually ran into somebody one night. He's a friend of John Lee's, and I've never seen it played. But it's not rugby, and it's the guy said something about the average player runs 8 or 10 miles in the game or something. And what's obviously it's not like
back in the early days of ESPN when they needed to fill their sports programming or their content day. They used to show Australian rules football all the time, but I don't remember anything about it now other than, some silly-looking guy who was a ref wearing all white like he was a cricket ref standing there and giving signals. So, I couldn't tell you now about the sport itself.
Well, I get the feeling that there's not the huddles like you have in this, and you're moving a lot and everybody plays both ways. Is that...
I think that is true. It is.
I think that's very close, Tom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is there passing and running? At least, I mean, do you actually line up, or do you just... I mean, rugby, you don't line up. You just go, right?
No, you line up in rugby also. Because the ball, I think, has to be passed back most of the time while they're moving the ball downfield.
Okay. But evidently, there's an awful lot of running in it, because this guy, there was an ounce of fat on this dude. I mean, he was built like whatever. I mean...
Right.
He wasn't like some guy you see, that is a lineman on the extra point or something that's 400 pounds and can't move type of thing. That's not what you do there, I don't think.
Yeah. So, Mike, you were about to say something about the transfer portal.
Oh, just that's just another way to get, another means to get into the system, to get into the NCAA system, is through the transfer portal for those guys in particular. And
those guys aren't even, they're not transferring out of anywhere. So, but they could, and they could be next year. You could see this guy's name in there doing something, wanting to go somewhere else.
Apparently,
he had been committed to Hawaii, and then Notre Dame's punter decided to transfer, so Notre Dame went after him, and they got him to commit. Apparently, he did not do a weather comparison.
Right. Yeah.
I'm guessing that the kid's going to go to grad school. I mean, I hope he's not freshman at age 20.
He's never been to college.
Well, he's never been to college. Wow.
Well, I said maybe.
Maybe. You guys remember?
Well, I guess then after a year or two, and it goes into what you guys were talking about previously. How long is the contract for? Let's say that the people that Brady may have signed into the school. So this is something I'm not aware of, Kevin. I'm sure you probably are. Is Brady Quinn a certified sports agent now, for instance?
Don't use the term agent.
No, I don't think so. I think they, he and a number of others run one of the collectives, and And it seems to me there's another one. I just read something about John Paxson being on the board of one of the collectives. And you heard me before. I think the collectives are just a scam.
Mike, I don't think you want to use that term agent. I think that's still a no-no. Or marketing consultant something.
All right.
I'm not positive. That's a Lou question because he was an agent. But I still don't think somebody undergrad can hire a, quote, agent, but I don't know what they call them. Because obviously there's somebody doing something for him.
Well, there's somebody being the middleman for this punter, for instance, you know, who, well, he probably has a contract rep on his side or whatever. And then it's because that's why what Kevin was saying, they should have checked the weather is right.
Yeah. What, remember, I don't know if you guys, I went to a game. When you see punters, everybody thinks all these punters are all alike, but once in a while there's somebody who's not alike, not like the other guys. The Irish played Florida State. This is sometime after we graduated, because he's been out of football for a while. And they had I had the top row in the old stadium, so you're pretty high, but not like the new stadium, where they added on stadium. And all of a sudden this guy's punting on Florida State, this left-handed punter, left-footed punter, and the ball is going over my head, and I'm on the top row, and I'm going, I've never seen that before. Who's this guy? It was that guy, Stark.
Yeah. And I remember him. I remember him at Florida State, and I remember him, and he punted in the NFL for a while.
Long time. I mean, he was all pro, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't Ray Guy, but he was pretty close.
Pretty good way to make a living, don't you think?
Well, that and the long snapper, now they can't run into you.
I mean, imagine what your work week is like if you're a punter.
You punt all day.
No, you don't, though. There's only so many kicks you're going to do in a day. You don't want to wear your leg out. So, yeah, I think your work day probably involves attending a special teams meeting and then probably hit the weight room a little bit and do a workout. And let me see, after that, maybe I'll go out with the, when they're ready to do special teams drills, and I'll punt six or seven times, maybe, and then call it a day.
Aren't a lot of those guys the holders, though, on place kicks?
Yeah, they could be the holders. Okay, so he's gonna punt a few, and then when they bring the place kicker out, he'll hold for a few.
There's a job.
Either way, it's not a rough day.
The two jobs I wouldn't want, though, are... The long snapper, you could be spectacular for two decades and blow one and you're an idiot. Same way to the place kicker. I mean, you could, those guys put the ball back there, all you gotta do is drop one and your name is infamy.
Yeah, it's long snapper is one of those things that teams don't like to spend a lot of money on or a position on the roster until they have a bad one, and then they are perfectly willing to go out and do what it takes to get somebody good.
Well, the guy in the Bears.
The Bears had Patrick Manley for all those years.
The longest
that guy's reputation was that ball went to the same spot, to the holder's hands, with the laces. Everything was perfect time after time after time.
And he was the longest.
That would be quite a skill.
Wasn't he the longest running Bear? Wasn't he 20 years or 18 years?
Yeah, the longest tenured Bear ever, yeah.
God, what do you suppose his pension's like? It's got to be up there. But the guy before him was there a while, too. I mean, why wouldn't you be, I guess? It's a nice. When they used to be able to run India, that was a different job.
Yeah, still not that bad because it was only a few times a game, but yeah, not as good as it is now.
Well, they would take a running start and bash right into you while you're bent over, right?
Yeah,
it was not the world's best. We talked a little bit, Mike. You texted me about the international money, right?
Right.
There is that one group we talked about it a couple months ago. The Saudis and a few other countries, China and somebody else, are trying to do something, and they're putting something together that is, I forget the name of it. It's supposedly backed by some recipe of oil and gold and silver and other stuff, right? But it hasn't really gotten off the ground at all, I don't think.
It hasn't? Well, let's say, okay, the Russians, what are they using to pay for oil now?
That's a very good question.
It's not the dollar, is it?
Well, somehow or another, unless you're doing a barter arrangement, oil still trades in dollars.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, I mean, if I don't know if, you know, Iran, for instance, and this is a perfect question for you. This is why I don't. If I was, you know, ever in a position of power, first thing I'd want, and I'm going to say blackboard and show my age, I want a big thing on my wall in the Oval Office that said, okay, where is all this crap coming from? Is really an oil tanker leaving from Iran, limping its way across the ocean to North Korea, and we've got a bazillion satellites and we don't spot it? They drop the oil off in North Korea and they load the thing up with the weapons Hamas appears to have used on October 6th. Because they had what? Didn't they have North Korean markings on them or something? And they're going to load it back?
Yes, they did. Well, that's the follow the money trail, Tom, and there are people that do that.
Well, I mean, it's a barter trail, because, I mean, the Iran can't write a check. They're not in a SWIFT system. Okay, neither can North Korea. So it has to be some sort of either barter, or they have to go through China or something along those lines, because that's the reason why, well, everybody is all crazed, and maybe so, maybe should be, about us giving Iran, us, the U.S., when we paid them off for the money they gave us years ago for the military equipment they never got. We had to pay them in cash. We had to, because you can't write them a check. They can't cash it. So
yeah, okay. So was that the money that Obama freed up?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
But we did another round of that, Mike.
Yeah, we did another round of that recently. I don't know.
Yeah, under they've done another round of it with the Biden administration too.
Correct.
But you know, now you come into the, and Mike, you being in Germany for a while. There are all kinds of German, because I worked on some of these for a while, just as a curiosity, the stupid stuff.
Well, the
I do.
Deutsche Bank does a lot of transfers too. So, and then you've got the euro. You know, they could do something with the euro to, and maybe that's how they're getting around the system.
Well, I mean, the SWIFT, the international banking system. You know, I don't think you can say I'm not using dollars, and I doubt if Iran can cash a check in a euro. I don't know, where's my Fed guys when I need them, but what I'm saying is there were German bonds that were issued in the 30s or the 20s that were bearer bonds that were gold-backed, and they allegedly, the banks are still there and some of the companies are still there, and Hitler basically just said, we're not paying. And we've held that up here, even though the Supreme Court held it up here, that those bonds are not, they're not, you know, fungible. Well, then the question comes down is, during the Shah's era, and Fari knew all about this,
the original Shah,
The Shah essentially ordered all these military parts, or planes, not parts, planes and a couple of destroyers and whatever, and he sent us a bunch of money, like a progress payment, to get the contracts going. And all of a sudden, he's out, because Fari said there was an F-14 that stayed on near the harbor, Baltimore, for like a decade before the Navy went and collected it. Because we never shipped the stuff, but we kept the money, whatever we is. So it's always been a big burr with those guys. And when Obama started the stuff, they said, hey, we want our money back. Now, the question is, who's we? The Shah's not there anymore. I mean, just like Hitler, you know, Hitler says, we're not paying. I think we could have probably said, you're not the government bought the stuff.
Yeah, you're not the government we made the contract with.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, I don't know if people do that on the international stage anymore. I mean, we're not Hitler necessarily.
Well, they wanted to sign that nuclear accord, so that was the sweetener, is what I would assume.
And then they're saying that was our dough. And to a certain extent, you know, who's our? I mean, the Iranian citizen's not about to get his check, is he? I don't think.
No.
And it is also not unusual for us to freeze funds over international skirmishes, and,
right?
Exactly, because we've done that against numerous African coup plotters and dictators and things like that.
I got a quick story, you guys. One of happens to be female lady I know that actually she has a mathematical system she's been trying to sell and stuff to people for a long time. It's very complicated. It's an area of math that I was never really good at, Mike. I always liked the math where you actually had an answer. Well, this is one of those things where it's the math we use to like organize stuff. So if you'd have had like that for the mortgage crisis, and you would have used a system like that, you could have had a system where if a mortgage didn't pay out, you could have added a mortgage to it and kept track of everything a lot better than they did. Anyway, long story short, the UN finds out about this, and they track her down, and they want to buy it. And they ended up giving her a UN passport, which, by the way, are purple. She showed it to me. And there's the Army or the Armed Forces. You know anything about this? They actually have a scanner now that you can scan a container. And they won't even tell. They won't tell you that there's a round thing in there. It'll tell you there's a basketball in there. I mean, the scanning has gotten so good on these things. Well, what they were trying to do, the UN was going to say, we're going to pay. We want a piece of property in everybody's place, where we're going to, every container that's like going to New Orleans or someplace is going to get scanned. And if it doesn't match in New Orleans, like it, somewhere along the way somebody's messed with it, it's going to get rejected. And they put all this money involved. And the thing kind of never went anywhere, but she was setting it up with one of these little dictatorships in Africa, not little, I'm sure a lot of property. They were paying the guy off. The guy had his own Swiss bank account, where every time, you know, the fee to scan the thing was, say, $5,000 or something, the guy was getting like $20 put in his bank account, the dictator. You know, I guess you got somehow or another, Mike, you end up having to play ball with these guys on some level or whatever. And it, to me, that would be a deal breaker for me. But then again, I guess if you want to get the job done, you got to get the job done, right?
Well, that was always the deal, and it probably still is the deal with Nigerian oil. You know, that we had to cooperate with the guys that were, whoever was the president at the time, and then there was always an influential general in the background. And a lot of the Nigerian politicians, for instance, a guy named Abubakar, that's how he came up through the ranks. Or that's how he ends up becoming the president of the country. It was through an army coup, and then he gets elected eventually.
Well, if you get in by a coup, the elections are, he the only guy run? Was he like Russia?
Well, that it was after the coup, for instance. They would do a coup, and then he would take over for a while. He'd get some experience, and then they'd hand it to somebody else. And then Abubakar would run for president 2 or 3 years later, and then he would get supposedly legitimately elected.
Well, because, I mean, it's when these places are so corrupt, that's why, you know, I don't think being corrupt is a good thing, even coming from Chicago. But I don't know how you can pass some kind of law saying you can't pay somebody off overseas. I mean, does anybody think that these people are putting these factories up in China without somebody in the Chinese Communist Party saying it's okay and greasing the wheels for them?
No, I'm sure that's how all the politicians get so rich, because they're getting greased probably every step of the way.
I was at I used to be in the Economic Club of Chicago.
Nevertheless, we do have a law that says,
yeah, we do.
We can't do that.
Right, and we should. You know, it's, well, who knows? You know, who knows what the deal is with Trump and some of his real estate deals, and
oh, yeah.
Biden with I think Hunter is essentially the money launderer for the Biden administration.
Yeah, he's the bag man.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, real quick story. I was at one point when Jimmy Tyree was still alive at Mesro, terrific man and died way too young. He said, hey, why don't you join this Economic Club of Chicago thing? It's a great group and blah, blah, blah. So he had to go a couple times as a guest of somebody, and so he took me as a guest. But anyway, so I do get in, and then when he died, I had nobody to go with, so I just kind of let it lapse. But I went to one of the things, and you know, it was a cocktail party beforehand for a half hour. So I'm standing there, and I meet this lady who works for the Chinese consulate, and I like get her card and so forth. And I said, you know, funny, somebody has called me last week, one of my clients, and said, how do I get started if I have to move a business to China? It was somebody who's the person they supplied was going to move to China, so for them to keep supplying them, they had to be closer. So he didn't really want to go to China, but he was thinking about it. And I said, you know, what's the deal with that? And she goes, well, have him come over to the consulate, and
right.
And when we'll find out what kind of business he wants and how big of a thing and what area the people he's going to be supplying, and we'll put him in touch with, I don't know, whatever they call him, some guy. What do they call them in Mexico? The guys who put all the deals together. So we'll make sure that she has
someone.
Yeah, promoter. Sorry, like a promoter. We'll make sure he has somebody that will find the spot and make sure that you know, that he can buy the factory or whatever. And we, you know, whatever. I don't think he can buy the whole thing.
Well, he'd be the local liaison, and
yeah.
Then he'd then get all the approvals for that local district.
Right.
He would be tied into them,
and he'd make sure there was never a strike. You know, that type of thing. I mean, so you've got, like, your guy, but the guy is going to be the son of, you know, one of Z's buddies, right? her daughter?
Yes, exactly. I mean, like, I can't imagine how Apple, you know, funnels, or how the money is funneled for a big company like Apple, because that would be a considerable amount of money for the party. And then the party then does some illegal real estate deals and or whatever, not real estate, but the party's probably benefited, and the higher ups all the way through the deal.
And you get it to some way where it's not a kickback, it's something, it's a consulting firm, it's something, right? It's not
right.
I mean, it's like an alderman setting himself up as a consulting firm for it's what Eddie Burke did for tax stuff, right? Same thing. It's not like human beings haven't figured this out, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, well, I mean, a lot of the how much cash did we spread? We got a dash here, Mike, but then we splashed a lot of cash around the Taliban guys trying to get them over to our side, right?
Yes, we did. There's a whole lot of cash, and with the Iraq army guys too. Well, some Iraqi officials, I'm sure, we splashed quite a bit of money too.
Yeah, good thing we got the Benjamins, eh?
We
can print those bad boys. Well, thank you guys. We got to get to Carl. It's our big Labor Day here today. So,
hey, looking forward to the big number.
The big number. Now, the question is, yesterday they were having a big debate. Is the number that big today because of the Fed meeting the same week? Is it not quite as big as it is big every other month? Now, there's a debate.
It'll be lower today because, you know, it's still in a primary political season, you know. Well, not the primaries, but we're in an election year. So they're going to keep the numbers down.
We also want it down because bad news is good news now. It means the Fed can cut now if the labor numbers are lousy.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that you might.
Mike, I've been trading for 40-some years. I never like these periods where bad news is good news and the other way around. It seems odd to me. I mean, I can't. It's hard to grasp. Anyway, S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 99. I like to keep going. I got my people pretty long. We had a great day yesterday, so I wouldn't mind two in a row. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There was long ones, tall ones, short ones, brown ones, black ones, round ones, big ones.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howell, Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 102. We ducked under the 199 a second ago, but we're back over to 102. We have the Professor Carl.
Ooh, dude.
How are you?
Well, you know, I'm doing okay. I have to admit, I'm more than a little surprised by the reaction that we got over the last couple of days after the Powell spike, which, by the way, if you look at a chart of the futures, it kind of looks like a middle finger.
God. Yeah. Well, I mean.
Well, it does. I mean, you know, you pull it up on an hourly and, you know, just take a look at, you know, what it looks like when, you know, Powell had his thing, right? I mean, it kind of looks like there's a middle finger sticking up.
Well, we were, just to give you an idea, one of the positions we have for some people is we are trying to be kind of sneaky long in the queues. And we took off a position that was a winner, not a very big winner, but a winner. And we took it off right before, you know, he talked. So
right.
Then we started to go down a little bit, and we said, okay, we're geniuses, we took this off. Then, of course, he starts talking, and we race up. We'd sold the 30-32 call spread for like 30 cents. It was you know, $5 out of the money, $6 out of the money, and it, you know, expiring in like 2 hours.
So, right.
So all of a sudden, it races up to like 30.
Ah.
And I'm sitting there going, God, what a couple of idiots. Why didn't we just wait 20 minutes?
Yeah, we just sit on that one for half an
hour. Well, we could have got 60 maybe. So then all of a sudden, just when we're thinking about it, right, I don't know what happened, right when he stopped talking, we turned the other way, and we must have spun 200 NASDAQ points. To where we ended up doing a new position at the 30 strike, and all of a sudden we just did it, and I'm going, wait a minute, we just did this. Now we're 22. That was 15 minutes ago. How could we be eight bucks away? Well, now all of a sudden yesterday and today, guess what? We're at 429.30, and the thing's a big winner. I'm like, duh. You know, it's so. Yeah, I mean, yesterday was a huge up day, but people forget that the last half hour on Wednesday was a disaster. But we made that up and then some yesterday, and now it looks like we're going more today.
Well, it's the, you know, the fascinating thing to me about this when I it's, because as I've talked about for a while, I've been watching this IRX TNX spread, where you know, I mean, it's because it's doing something it at least in my investing time. I mean, it did something like this back in the 1970s, but I was a kid. At least in my time when I, you know, and certainly in the world of electronic trading, which of course, you know, didn't exist back then. It was all floor guys, right? You know, you called your broker.
The good old days when things were straight.
Yeah, you know, yeah. There, you know, the bank of phones that was on the floor, you know, like from trading places, right? Which of course, you know, is mostly all gone now. And but the thing is that you have to go back that far to see a pattern that looks like this. And there's everyone's always says this time it's different. That's always the mantra you hear whenever something, you know, really insane gets going. You know, I heard it in the 1990s. I was in the middle of it in the 1990s. And the fascinating part of it was that from the sitting on the CEO side of the desk in a company that was private, so I had skin in the game, only that I was buying some of these IPOs and then flipping them and, you know, doing things like this. But from a standpoint of actually operating a company, I didn't have skin in the game. I didn't have my company out there as one of those IPO guys. But a bunch of people around the industry that I did business with or that I was intimately familiar with, they did. Right, so I mean, it was all around me. It was, you know, I played golf with people all the time that were in the middle of all this nonsense, whether they were running the book for the, you know, some deal, or they were actually one of the principals. And I kept telling them, I said, you know, you realize that there's no pattern for this. You can't look at this and say, well, this is, you know, this is how it's going to turn out. Oh, well, it's different. Everything's changed.
Things have always, whenever they can't explain it, it's just things are changing. And you should be able to see forward, Carl. I mean, let me
give you an example. Yeah. One of the pieces of insanity that I just saw yesterday. Okay, so you know, Musk has just come out with these Cybertrucks, right? He started delivering them. I mean, you know, they've been announced for a while, but they're actually being delivered now to customers. I actually saw one in my area a few days ago. I think it's ugly. I wouldn't own one of those things, but you know, I mean. Style is a personal preference thing more than anything else, right? So now we have a couple people that have popped up on social media that have managed to get their hands on the data stream, the, you know, the volume. It's encrypted, so you can't see what it is, but the volume of data that's come out of these things. And as it turns out, it looks like what's happening, because you can't get the so-called full self-driving yet on the Cybertruck. So it looks like what's actually happening here is that you bought a vehicle, and you, by doing that, you are now the source of information that Elon is using to obtain the data he needs to attempt to implement that on that platform. Now think about the insanity of that. I mean, that he ought to be paying you.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That truck around, all right? Not the other way around. You paid all this money. You supposedly own this vehicle, and yet all the data that gets generated by it is his, and he's out there claiming that he's going to make trillions of dollars with robo-taxis, and guess how he's going to do it? Because you were dumb enough to give him the information
necessary to train his model. Now, I don't think it's going to work, by the way. I think the entire thing is, you know, I mean, he said he was going to have this problem solved, you know, 5 years ago, and so far that's been a complete load of BS. But the fact that he's managed to sucker people into doing this, and he hasn't been sued to be on the orbit of Mars for it, is amazing.
Yeah, but Carl, look at his... I don't want to denigrate the world here, but look at his clientele. People that they can't pull out $3 for their coffee over the Dunkin' Donuts. They got to let the world know they bought a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. They're dying to give people this information.
I just look at things like this, and that's just a screaming example of it. But it's by no stretch of the imagination the only thing, right?
But I mean, it's not. I mean, if you were to say, the truck would cost 50 cents more if you pull that information away from us, everybody's gonna say, I don't care if he has it.
Oh, yeah. No, I fully under. I get it. In that, the model is what it is, right? The business model, whatever have you. I look at these kinds of events in the modern era, and the fact, the fact that everything is now trying to be a subscription, okay? You know, BMW started this nonsense with you got to pay, $4 a month to have your seat heaters work, which are in the car, by the way, but they're turned off unless you pay them extra money.
Really?
And and this kind of stuff now is all over. Well, this is the same thing with this so-called full self-driving. Right, I mean, you don't have to pay the $10,000 for the software or whatever. It's actually in the car, but for $100 a month or whatever, you push a button and it's on, right? There is an extraordinarily offensive element to that, in that all of the stuff that's necessary to provide this is actually in whatever it is that you bought. It's already there. I understand, if I buy a car and the leather seats are an extra $2,000, well, they're actual leather seats, right?
One would hope, yeah.
Well, I'm saying, if I didn't pay the $2,000, the seats that are in the car are not made out of leather, okay? The seating surfaces. Okay, I get that. There's a physical element to it. I buy a car that has a V6 engine as opposed to a 4, or has a V8 or whatever. It's a physically different engine. You buy an EV and it's got this size battery as opposed to that size battery. All right. But how about if you buy a gas powered car and it has a 300 mile range, and then you pay a subscription fee and all of a sudden it has a 400 mile range. And the only difference is the computer forces the gas pump to shut off when the tank's 3/4 full.
Well, there you go.
I mean, that's the kind of thing we're talking about, though, okay? Or even worse, it's when there's a quarter of a tank left of fuel, the fuel pump shuts off.
Well, I mean, it is a crazy world, but for some reason, people put up with it. I mean, and not only that, they're paying more for it.
Well, that's the other element of it. I mean, we see this kind of thing. It's like, it's what Quicken has done, the same sort of thing. Okay, with I use their software. I've used it for years. It's convenient because I don't have to do manual transaction entry. Okay, it does interchange with with your bank and your credit cards and pulls the stuff down for you. And by the way, also does it with brokerages, which is really handy if you trade actively. Now, prior to when cost basis was reported by brokerages automatically, it wasn't good enough to do taxes. Now it is. But the thing about that is it ran on your computer, and then Quicken says, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. Okay, well, screw you. I'll just keep the version I have. There's nothing wrong with it. I like it. It works perfectly well. Well, how they got away with screwing you on that and forcing you to buy the newer subscription model is they shut off the interchange. So even if you manually were willing to go grab the files from the brokerages and the banks, they shut it off in their back end that allowed the software to allow it to work. So if, unless you wanted to enter all your transactions manually, you had to upgrade.
Yeah. I mean.
Well, when did I consent to that, Chief?
Well, you know, you're remember P.T. Barnum. There's one sucker born every minute and two to take him, right?
Well, but again, you know, I mean, this comes down to this, you know, the whole argument I made all the way along. You know, rule of law. Okay, our former Surgeon General Adams was out on X the other day, whining about the fact that he got bent over the table when he had to take an ambulance ride for an unexpected medical thing. And I said, "Oh, so, you know, you were the Surgeon General. Well, what did you do about all these providers?" So, by the way, that's violation 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1. Last time I checked, you're supposed to be given a price before you're obligated to pay for something. That's also just commonly called fraud when you're not. How many people went to prison?
Girl,
during your time in office? So now you got bent over the table by the very thing that you've allowed everybody else when you were in office.
Yeah, but now, but when it happens to you, it's different. We know that.
Oh, well, you know what? Same thing that you got now. You got now Congress wants to say they just passed a bill, which is blatantly unconstitutional, that says you can't criticize Israel. Okay? You can't say that Israel's government is racist, that if you do this, you can be sanctioned. Now, that's blatantly unconstitutional.
Yeah, I don't get that.
All right. Secondly,
you can say ours. You can say ours is racist, but you can't say theirs is.
Well, and oh, by the way, the 1950, literally 1950, right of return law is racist. All right. It is the definition of racism in that it grants special privileges to people based upon their heritage. That's racism. Now, can you make it illegal to say that?
No such thing as racism against some people, and everything against other people is totally racist. It's the world we're in. But I think what we're seeing, Carl, is that when this kind of stuff happens, and it happens so often, and you see big companies and you see them doing crazy stuff and antitrust, people think that that's actually the way you're supposed to do business now. If you even say, "Wait a minute, that's not right," nobody even. I mean, look at. I mean, I want to zero in a little bit. We got a couple minutes here before we do the labor stuff, but
yeah.
This whole Apple thing is. I think people are losing track of owning a company and running a company is generally very basic. Okay, but when you get to these higher levels, it's not so basic. I mean, you would think that somebody who, if 10 people get together and they invest in a hot dog stand or a hamburger stand, and the thing does well, somebody's going to have a meeting, the shareholders are going to get together, and they're going to say, "Okay, we made $500,000 this year, what are we going to do?" And somebody's going to say, "Well, maybe we should pay out 50 of the shareholders. Maybe we should think about getting another hamburger stand. Maybe, right. We'll have a capital budget. Maybe we'll think about expanding the one we have, because it looks like there's a line out the door every day." These are decisions that are made, I mean, all the time. And if we say, "Well, we've already got four in town, we can't do any more than four in town, and we don't want to go anywhere else," okay, well, that $500,000, maybe you should give $250,000 back to the shareholders, or $300,000, because you're not using it for anything else, right? If all of a sudden you decide you want to go to the next town next year, we'll discuss it after next meeting or something. But this is just somewhat common sense to me. I mean, the idea that when places get big, all these rules don't apply, that's total BS. They do apply. People just learn to work around them. So now you see companies like, now what Apple is up today, and I, you know, who knows why stocks are up. But it's up because they're buying stock back.
Right, well, and for you to bang on them about that is absolutely accurate. I mean, you know, you look at the actual report, and by any metric you care to use, their business is deteriorating.
Yeah, we're down 10% over last year, right?
Yeah,
iPhone sales. I mean, some of the other stuff was up. Some of the other stuff was up.
You know what, Chief? If I, you know, when I was running MCS, if we pulled a quarter like that, you know, now we weren't public, so we didn't report it, but you bet I had the data, you know, more frequently than that. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch that stuff like a hawk. If I was off 10% of one of my core lines of business, oh my God. I mean, that's an all hands on deck. That's a fire alarm.
Well, yeah, but imagine if the 10 people who put the money up for the hamburger stand walked in. Now, I get it, and I rail about this all the time, that this double taxation of dividends is something we absolutely have to change, and it will never change in anybody's lifetime. It just won't. We don't know why, but it won't. But now, if we walk into our meeting for the shareholders on the hamburger stand, and the guy who's running the place, let's call him Ricardo, says, well, you know, here's the deal. I don't really want to do that. What I would like to do is issue myself a lot of stock options with a deadline date on them or something. And oh, by the way, we're going to buy some stock back. And everybody's going to go, why can't you just pay a dividend? No, this is way better. So all of a sudden now the stock may run up. You know, it might be, you know, momentum play, might be anything. All of a sudden, he doesn't want to, but he's forced to exercise those stock options and sell the stock at a very high price. Where even though now we haven't gotten any of the profit of the company, now we could sell our shares, I suppose, but if we don't want to, we've not really gotten any of the profit, if there is any. And now this guy, Ricardo, much as I like him, is now up, say, $400 million on our company. And you're sitting there going, wait a minute, how did that happen? And he'll say, well, I'm never paying a dividend because I want to save you guys some taxes. And I'm going to say, don't save me. How about lobbing a dividend? I'll pay it. Oh, no, man. I could never do that because I'm saving your ass, right? By the way, right. I'm buying more stock back. And, oh, by the way, I'm the one who's selling it. Carol, you couldn't write fiction like this.
Well, you know, the reason, I mean, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but the reason that used to be illegal, and you know, all the way through time until you know, some certain people got bribed the right way, who knows whether that's really what happened, but I bet it was, is that inevitably when you do buybacks like this, what ends up happening is that you steal the equity percentage from the common shareholder and you give it to management.
Well, sure.
Because the percent of the outstanding float that is owned by the common shareholder goes down. He's not compensated for that. The percentage that is owned by the management goes up, and this is done with the so-called claim that this benefits the common shareholder. Because of course, in a bull market, what tends to happen is, you know, supply and demand. There's less supply, therefore the price goes up, right? So that's what you expect. However, the problem is that in a bear market, the losses are equally magnified.
Well, sure.
So instead of losing $5, you lose 20.
But the quick question: do you think something like this? I mean, Apple. Now, you know, obviously they've been a great company. They've managed to deal with this China thing somehow, and they, you know, they make all kinds of money. There's no question about that. They have this thing is up. It was up $16. Now it's up $10.78. How many people do you think even have a clue how many shares they have outstanding?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's absolutely enormous.
It's $15.5 billion.
Right.
So do we really think that these guys taking some of the cash and buying shares back, what does that mean? It went up $160 billion in value? Because
that's the other cute part is how come when they announce something like this, the market cap change is larger than the delta?
Well, yeah.
I mean, now, you know, logic says that doesn't happen, but it does happen. It happens repeatedly. It's one of the reasons that these things keep being done.
Well,
it looks like a free lunch.
Some of it's value, some of it's... But, I mean, when you start talking about individual stocks, we've had a bunch of stocks in the last couple of weeks that have moved. What did Carvana move last night? What the hell, I got it up here someplace. I mean, what is that thing? It's not CAR. What is that? I'll find it. But Carvana,
CVNA.
CVNA, all right.
And by the way, that's a very odd story too. But yeah, they got
what was it up yesterday? $40 or something?
They got a huge spike on earnings. Yeah,
I mean, the numbers. Some of it is market fabric. Some of it is you let these earnings things out at the end of the day when there's not a lot of people even have access to their accounts. You're not going to have hardly any standing orders. so the market fabric is horrible for the time, but that's exactly what you want.
This is also a company that, you know, they were expected to post up a substantial loss, and they posted an EPS beat.
Right. I mean, we're talking about Carvana now, not Apple.
Yeah. Carvana. But this is a Carvana's an interesting case because we have there's a tectonic shift that's going on right now in the automobile market. Largely because what happened during the COVID period of time was between supply disruption and automakers, which, you know, for the last 20 years have leaned heavily on tarted up trucks for their margins. You look at the gross margin on those in those $100,000 pickups, you makes your eyes water.
Oh yeah,
right? How's
can you buy a basic pickup, or you got to live in like an Iowa someplace?
No, actually you can. The thing is that I've been looking at it for this particular segment of the market now for a while, because I would kind of like a 3/4 ton basic pickup truck. Okay. The problem is that the so-called basic work truck is now a $50,000 proposition.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's obscene. 15 years ago, that was a $20,000 proposition. Now, of course, you know, it's vinyl seats, rubber floor. Well, you know, yeah, exactly. Fine. But they dragged all of this along. But that $100,000 pickup has a 30% margin on it. All right, which is unbelievable. I mean, nobody gets away with that kind of thing in a retail business very long without a competitor coming in there and destroying them. But it has happened, and the supply chain constraints drove a lot of it. It's the reason that it was allowed to occur, that somebody else in the competitive marketplace did not come along and ruin them. And then the other thing that caused a huge amount of this was the fact that you drove the demand so hard with the 0% finance rates. Okay. So there's all kinds of gamesmanship going on the financial side that drove this as well. Well, now that worm has turned on both sides.
A little bit.
The finance side, definitely.
Right, but I mean, you're still, I don't, when I drive by, there's a lot of auto dealers up by Audrey. I don't see any basic 8-foot bed, regular cab pickups sitting anywhere.
No, but what I do see is a whole bunch of the other ones sitting on the lot that aren't moving.
Well, there's a guy by her that has he's a BMW dealer. God's sake, Carl, the dude has to have 500 cars in the lot.
Well, I know it. It's like, the other day I had to run, there's a friend of mine needed a part for his Toyota, and the dealer that's closest to us here has a reputation, so not in a positive way. So we took a quick run up to another one just north of town, and we pulled in, and I'm like, oh, so much for there being a supply chain disruption. The new side of the lot was stuffed full, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they better start selling some of them at a decent price, because you can't get into an auto repair place. Hey, we have one question here regarding our tax. We're talking about the tax deduction on dividends. What about unrealized capital gains? I don't think you're ever going to see that. Chief, you're not going to see that tax that way. I mean,
Chief, this is never going to. You know what? What Biden? Listen, what the president wants in the wish list nonsense that gets out there. Remember, this stuff's got to go through both houses of Congress. Okay, everybody makes such a big thing about whoever happens to be sitting in that seat, whatever comes out of that person's mouth. If we had any kind of sanity in the tax code, there'd be two or three three brackets, zero deductions, all right, and you wouldn't get taxed on dividends. You'd get taxed on the income, as ordinary income. But the corporation wouldn't get taxed on a dividend. You get taxed on it when you got it. Okay. Now,
I would make it easier than that. Make it dividend deductible, and the corporation pay the same tax as everybody else.
Well,
get to the same place.
Flatten things out so it's the same. So you get taxed one time at whatever the marginal rate is, period, end of conversation, right? And it doesn't matter how you try to, shenanigan it. It doesn't work. You pay the tax. And that would be, but that's never going to happen, because every time we have one of these 700-page bills, somewhere in there is, you know, one paragraph that says, well, this person gets screwed and these this guy gets the money.
Well, do you think if we got we're going to dash earlier because we want the number when we come back. Do you think if dividends were deductible, that Apple would be buying stock back instead of paying a dividend? I'd say they're paying a dividend.
No, I'd say I would think they would pay the dividend, but you know, it all depends, because I think the primary impetus for this has gone away from tax management and has gone to screwing the shareholder for the benefit of the executives, and that's not going to go away until we change some laws.
Yeah, if you went in there and said, why don't we pay a $3 dividend, you just set off a stink bomb in that boardroom.
Oh, absolutely.
SP Futures up 19, NASDAQ Futures up 114. We'll come right back with the labor numbers.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're going to do a very quick traffic weather here because we're going to get to these numbers with Carl. The number that we're up 175 here. We got the S&P futures now up 58, so we love them because these guys knew these numbers because now these are somewhat bad numbers, which means we're going to cut instead of raise. S&P futures up 57, NASDAQ futures up 258. By the time I get the stuff from the other, why don't you do a real quick traffic weather sports. Let's get to Carl, and then we'll talk about these numbers in a bit.
Sounds good, Chief. Good morning. It's currently 7:31 a.m. right here in Chicago. We got 62 degrees with a high of 63, 60% chance of precipitation, and tonight's going to be partly cloudy with a low of 48 degrees. On the Phoenix, weather is 69 degrees right now with a high of 93, warm with sunshine, and tonight will be clear with a low of 68. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 31 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 52 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 30 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 24 minutes. And inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 30 minutes. On MLB Sports, the Cubs lose to the Mets 6-7 in New York, but they're playing today at 1:20 p.m. in the Wrigley Field in Chicago against the Brewers. White Sox versus Cardinals in Busch Stadium in St. Louis, Missouri, today at 7:15 p.m. And finally, the Padres versus the Diamondbacks in Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona, today at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Carl, what do you make of this, bud? I've got a what's the number, 172 or something? So
yeah, so on the unadjusted, it's actually kind of there's some interesting stuff in here. On the unadjusted figures, plus 234, that's a bad number. Okay, for an April, that's definitely rather pick it, so to speak. Although there have been, you know, there have been years that's actually been negative on the unadjusted. So I mean, that's the interesting element of it is that the employment population ratio, which, you know, is the one that I always watch, is kind of like the barometer of sustainability from a taxing and, you know, government operations perspective, did tick up one. Okay, which is okay, you know, I mean, it is what it is. We had a whole bunch of people, about 600,000, that decided to couch surf. It's, the delta was on couch surfers was 658 last month. But the number that ought to be concerning everybody, and this has been going on for a while now. This is, where are we now? One, two, three, four, five. Well, we're 6 months into this consistently, is on an employment population basis. We've got a five-month run here that's negative close to a million. In other words, yes, we're adding jobs. You know, we put 234,000 jobs in, right? But the problem is that we put more than that many people in. Okay? So if you look at the, you know, at the people, the 12-month run rate of jobs versus people is -1.1 million. And that's been negative about a million now for the last 5 months. So this is... That is not a very, you know, that's not a very good number. If you take just for the month, the population adjusted gain was only 52,000, and that's down substantially. It was, you know, 500,860,000 the month before, and 500,000 the month prior to that. So, this does not look like very good data, and implies some internal softening. The other thing that's interesting is that, on an employment population ratio basis, the majority of the hiring was in unskilled.
That doesn't surprise me. I'm going to try and take out. I'm looking at the one that most people would look at.
Here's the other thing too, is that there was a tick down in average weekly hours, which that one's troubling because every tick in that number is about 600,000 jobs.
That's the number that I think if you were to ever, either one of us ever invited back on TV, that's the number I would zero in at, is that it looks everybody's got a job, but the amount of hours worked by person, I never looked
here's the other thing though, Chief. It's down two ticks in goods producing and flat in service. So on the we actually make something useful side, this is a substantially negative number. And the other thing that really bothers me, considering that this is now this is data into the spring. Okay, what do we normally have happen in the spring? We have construction pickup.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that was down seriously. That went from 39.3 hours last month to 38.7.
That's huge.
That's a six tick decrease. Okay, that's a monster drop. So. Those people who say that there is no, you know, hurricane coming in, especially in the residential and commercial construction market. This says otherwise.
I'm on the A1 here, which most people.
By the way, transportation warehousing was down four ticks on hours work too. So,
what about the where can you get, since I don't get Business Week anymore? Where can you get like rail car loadings or those numbers? I bet they're down.
I'd have to go. That's in a different space, but yeah, I mean, the negative prints in these hours work numbers is pretty. That's pretty dramatic, and I don't see any increases, really anywhere. I don't see any any bright spots. I mean, if you want to, in utilities it was up one tick. Whoopee woody.
Well, you've got numbers, and you've got the money sloshing around where whatever economic position you want to take,
right?
I can help you find numbers to back your case. I mean,
yeah,
right?
Well, here's the other bad news, though. Average weekly earnings, okay? So I always love this table. Hourly earnings at total private went from 34.68 to 34.75. Yay, bigger check per hour, right? Well, problem is, it was a dollar less in your check at the end of the day.
Okay.
That's you know what? I don't care how much you get paid an hour. What I care is how much I can buy, right? If your take home goes down because your hours are getting cut, that doesn't help you.
No, it makes you go get another job, which is why the establishment survey actually maybe does match up with the household, because people get another job.
Well, yeah, but an establishment would count that as two jobs.
Right.
But you, of course, it's...
McCown, I'm looking at on the dummy page, which I'm on here, okay. But the one that's adjusted, but if you go year over year, I would think the adjustments should fall out. Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay,
they should. They should.
All right, so
if it's not gamed.
All right, so I've got the people in the employment population is up from 166.7 to 166.9. So we're 167.9, sorry. So we're up essentially $1.3 million. All right, now we've added in the people employed are 160.900 to 161.4. So a little less than half of maybe 500,000 exactly went into being employed, and more than that went into either the unemployed is actually up from 5.7 million to 6.4. The unemployment rate since last April went from 3.4 to 3.9.
Right.
So we've actually added 600,000 to the unemployed group and 300,000 to the we don't know what they're doing group. So
couch surfers,
or whatever. I mean, retired students, whatever it is. So out of the 1.3 million, only 500,000 are employed and 800,000 are not.
And 350,000 of those want a job and can't find one.
Right. Well, I'm saying either way, those numbers are not something you write home about. Over the course of a year, you would like to see, out of the 1.3 million added, a million employed and a couple of guys coming off the last columns, right?
Well, Chief, the salient number there is the employment population ratio.
Yeah.
Okay. It went from 60.4 to 60.2. Every tick in that number is about 600,000 people.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That matches almost exactly with my NAG 1108 on a population corrected figure across the last 12 months, off unadjusted. That's an almost exact match. So that validates that the methodology's right.
And when we go back to pre-COVID, let's say 2001, that number was 64.4. So we're talking, that's a hell of a lot more people paying in than taking out.
Right. Well, that's the problem. That's, you want to know where the deficit issues are coming from. Well, that's a big part of it. All right. The other part is just making making the government bigger. But in terms of actually being able to fund it, it's right there. And this is the problem in the longer term with offshoring labor and with driving the demographic picture, people's desire to have families, be able to make children, have them grow up. We can raise them. We can have a productive family home, and everything's okay. We can put food on the table and pay for the house and whatever, pay the car insurance bill and everything else. When you destroy that, it is a long tail thing that happens because you can't turn around and fix it in an hour or in a week or in a year. Voting somebody into office, this November is not going to result in that, those statistics turning in another 6 months, because it takes 18 years to make another kid, okay? So, and grow that child to adulthood. You have to change the incentives in a way that people believe that is going to be a productive thing for them to do. Or what you're going to get is people that don't care about being productive doing it, and the people who can think about it and do make that decision are going to say no. And, what have we been doing for the last 20 years?
Well, I'm looking back here to, I don't want to take 2000 because that's, it was Gaga time with the...
Yeah.
2001, and these are gross numbers, but they have a message in there. We had roughly 137 million people employed.
Yeah, I'm looking at April 01 is 137.022. Yeah.
Okay, and we've got the unemployment number, 6.8, is pretty much right where it is now.
I got 4.4.
This is the end of 2001. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm looking at 2001.04.
All right, so but I'm saying the we don't know what they're doing column is 71, so we've got a total of 79 million people either actively looking for a job, in school, retired, or couch surfing. Right. Out of 136 million people employed. So we, whatever that ratio is, but since then, let's say it's 63.7. Since then, we've picked up roughly, so 64% of the people were essentially employed back then out of the people that are available. Since then, we've picked up, where am I going, 2001, 136.9 to 161. It's 25 million people up, right, that are working. But now we also have 27 million people up, actually less unemployed, in what are we doing count. So we've, since that time, half the people in the workforce are not working, and which has dragged the number from 63.7 down to 60.3, which is what Carl's talking about.
Right.
Now, but you know, we had, time we got left for me to tell, yeah, we got time for me. When we were talking about the elections here in Chicago, you remember the lady we had on a couple times, she was running for Bobby Rush's spot, Karen Reeves? And she was,
yeah, I think so.
But she, terrific lady. She adopted a blind kid, you know, to tell you what how terrific she is. But she's been working in these places to help in these, you know, under whatever neighborhoods. And her goal always was, look, we got to get somebody education, training, get a decent enough job to where they can have pay for their own place, they can have their family, and oh, by the way, we don't have to worry about them anymore. And it's, and that, but now she's out there with that goal. You see what's happening in Chicago now. It's, we need to permanently have rent that we're, the other people are subsidizing. We have to permanently have people that aren't working that we have to take care of, which if you're sick or whatever, I get it. But the all hands on deck should be to get this number back from 60 to 64, because if we do, I don't think we have anywhere near the tax problems and all the other stuff that we have now.
No, you don't. And that's, but the problem with this is that it's, you know, learned response. Pavlov's dog is not just Pavlov's dog. It also applies to, you know, pretty much everything else, right? If you subsidize something, you get more of it. And we have this idea that somehow, as long as I've got checks in the checkbook, I can keep writing them and they're fine. And I have no idea what breaks this fever, particularly with both DC and in the cities, but the data is saying that this, you know, this ship is taking on water and has a hell of a list right now. And unstable.
How much of it is, I mean, I don't know the answer to this. How much of this is the people that we have in power, and you know, I look at the mayor right now in Chicago. I don't know that the man has the background to understand the finances of a city like Chicago. I mean, why would he? I mean, I don't know what his education is, but he sure doesn't sound like it. When he was talking about the stadium for the Bears, he made it sound like it was going to be a big winner. And he's winging numbers around, and I'm sitting going, where's he getting those? Give the man a calculator, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just, all you got to do is look at this, okay? Transportation and warehousing went up a penny an hour in hourly earnings, right? So, okay, that's progress, right? But your average paycheck was down $12.
That's really something.
That's a couple beers.
Yeah.
Okay, that's. I mean, we're not talking about 15 cents here. It's down $12. Now, you know, what is that? Well, that's enough money to buy a meal for yourself and your wife, right? It, you know, if you're cooking it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a dinner. All right. So, excuse me, but, you know, if you, anyone that, you know, oh, this means the Fed's going to cut rates. No, it doesn't. No, I'm sorry, it doesn't. I mean, I get that's what the market's telling you right now, right? But no, it doesn't, because the reason this is happening is that the economy is running out of gas, no matter what people try to tell you. If I don't look, if I don't got to move stuff around, things are not doing well. Right? What is trade transportation warehousing? That.
Well, we have to me, it's a little bit of a disconnect. I mean, I'm looking at this sea of green on my page here, and I'm pretty happy with it because I'm long for my people. But I'm wondering how close we're almost to the point now where it reminds me of '82, and it was like an 18-month lag before interest rates started to go back down. I mean, the mantra today is Powell said he wasn't going to raise. He pretty much took raising rates off the table.
Now, no, he didn't.
Well. That's the interpretation is that he did.
Well, that may be the interpretation, but I listened to the conference and he did not. He used the word, he explicitly referenced that inflation was not going where he wanted four separate times in the space of about, you know, two paragraphs in his statement. And he backed that up during the conference.
All right. So you had a better day in one regard than me yesterday because I was listening to the stuff, which I do for my people. It's my job to listen to this crap. There must have been five people in the know. On CNBC, big shots everywhere they were. It's off the table.
I know. That's what I heard. Every talking head, you know, CNBC had their eight up, you know, thing going right after the announcement. And yeah, I listened to that, but that's not what the statement said. And then during the press conference, he didn't say that either. He did say we're not doing anything right now.
Right.
But
okay. So
he said, we're not even going to contemplate this until we actually see. The inflation numbers, you know, go the way we want them to. And, oh, by the way, he also said several times that the data has been going the wrong direction.
Well, but the what's going on here, obviously today, the interpretation is, and I agree with you, by the way, is that's off the table, and now we're in this bad news is good news kind of stuff. The numbers came in a little light today, so the employment group, which now they've got these guys figured in, that they are not going to cut rates until the employment picture worsens a little bit. And by the way, today's numbers indicate that it's worsening a little bit. So we're just that much closer to this magical 0.25% rate where we go back to zero interest and these stocks double again.
You know what? Wherever that, whatever that is that you're smelling in Hubbard's Cave, it ain't weed.
Okay, but now the other thing is, are the last 2 days here, are we looking at a blow off top? Or are we getting real close to one?
Yeah, I think what we're, although it doesn't have that kind of a shape, okay, but what I think we're seeing is the people are grasping at everything they can to, you know, to try to justify the valuation numbers that you're seeing. You know, companies selling it, you know, 80 times earnings and like this,
yeah.
Right?
If there are any earnings.
And you're not talking about firms that are startups that have, you know, you're talking about companies that have been around for 20 years, you know, NVIDIA, things like this.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I mean, I get it when there's no earnings because it's a brand new firm and you think that there's, you know, this future that is okay, and yet none of it is there today. I mean, Tesla, same thing. Tesla, you know, been selling cars for how long now? But the thing is that all of this is predicated on being able to turn that crank again with the cheap financing. And I don't see any way that rates come down to any material degree at all. I mean, where they are right now is not restrictive. Where they are right now is essentially...
They kept saying it was restrictive, and I kept saying, no, it's not.
Well, no, it's not, because time has value, and in a 3%... growth economy, well, you've got 3%, you've got a couple percent productivity, that's 5, okay? And, oh, by the way, that means that short-term rates should be, you know, for 13-week bills should be maybe 5.25, 5.5. Well, guess what they are? Long rates should be about 2 points over that on a 10-year. Well, they're not. They're below that level. And so, you know, the curve is sitting in a place that makes absolutely no sense based on the economic data, but it's sitting there because everybody thinks that tomorrow rates are going to be lower than they are today. That's the market bet. But show me the data that supports that happening, unless there is a deep recession. Okay, and growth goes negative. Well, then I got 3% productivity and I got, you know, -2 GDP. Okay, now it makes sense that, you know, that long rates would be 3. Boy, you don't want to live in that world. Unemployment will be 14%.
Yeah, they're pushing I don't. I think these guys, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a little older, but their sense of history, if he doesn't do anything, if he keeps the money supply level, of course the rest of the world is pushing it up, so we're getting
leakage.
We get some leakage. That's the only way that the balance sheet can be coming down and the money supply is staying steady, right? Is we're getting leakage and we're getting natural growth of money supply with the wealth boom, right? I mean, people that sell their house all of a sudden have a boatload of money in their bank account.
Right.
But I think he I hope he knows this, Carol, but there's somehow, some way, there is this absolute lag in these CPI numbers. And now I know they're, well, I suspect they're cheating, and you, I think, agree with me on that. But someday, somehow, if you and I are right, and the inflation since 2020 has been 40% and not 18, it's, unless they really found a way to do it, somehow it's going to leak its way through. He's going to think he has this inflation thing licked, yet somehow the 40% increase in rents that is only showing 18 or 20 now, if that, is going to come through late. And he's going to wonder why these numbers are still going up. It's the same thing happened to Volcker. And they probably were less cheating back then. But we kept looking at where are these numbers coming from. There was no inflation, Carl. I remember it. I know when there was, and I know when there wasn't. You and I knew.
Well, yeah. I mean, I lived through it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, I was a young adult, but I lived through it. And when it stopped, it was nice because all of a sudden, oh my God, I can actually go earn some money and keep some of it.
But now look at recently, though. You don't have to go back to, you know, ancient times. Recently, this guy was chairman, and everybody, I don't care who you were, you're Mickey the Mope, you knew that there was inflation percolating all over the place, and he was in denial for a year, and so was the CPI. And I'm saying what he gained on the front end, he's going to lose on the back end, and I don't think he knows that.
Well, I don't know precisely what's going on in his head, but and if he's not having a conversation with people in Congress and saying, look, if you don't get the budgetary situation under control, then what I do is irrelevant because I can't control the actual rate that people will lend you money at. I can influence it heavily, and I can jawbone, and I can make all kinds of noise. But at the end of the day, you have to pay the interest ticket to those people that hold those treasuries. And as long as you keep doing this, the cost of doing that is going to go up. It's not going to go down. Mm-hmm. Now, at some point, the market realizes you may not be able to pay them at all. And if that day comes, you're hosed. And you may not get any warning on it.
I would agree. We on Monday or on Tuesday, I want to kick up to Ricardo. Write these down, will you, buddy? On Tuesday with Carl, let's talk about this number that keeps coming up now, which I'm sure was always there. I never really looked at it. This worldwide debt number, people and countries worldwide, which is absolutely staggering. But the other is, where exactly, I mean, we talked about it, I don't know if I talked about what you were with Hal, maybe, the idea that you look at the Treasury statement, which is detailed down to, you know, whatever, every penny, and yet the debt is growing a lot faster than that. Now the question is, I talked about it with Mike the other day regarding, and he said some Defense Department research might be off book, some CIA stuff might be off book, but by and large, everything that the Army buys is on book, probably, that he thinks anyway. And where is this? I mean, where exactly? I mean, I think, first of all, I would disagree a little bit in terms of Powell having to go to Congress. Powell is an individual, and by the way, I'm not saying I would be any different, is not independent. He's not strong backbone. I mean, I bet he's a terrific guy, and he's real smart. But the idea of him, anybody in that situation right now, going to Congress and saying, you know, next month when you guys spend $20 billion and tax $12 billion, I'm not giving you the other $8 billion. You're going out and borrowing it on your own, or you're going to raise taxes, or you're going to do something. nobody's in that position to do that. I mean, Solomon couldn't do that. I don't think Churchill could do it. Maybe Churchill could do it. But nobody has the balls to do that, and nobody has the power to do that. But that's because
well, he has the power to do it. He's just not going to.
Well, and if he did, you know, people say, "What are you doing?" Because nobody even knows that's what would have to happen. And what do you think his 10-year rate would be the next auction if he said that? It would be 10.
Oh yeah, 8 or 9 maybe.
Yeah.
But the thing is this is that so yes and no. So you know, people always talk about the primary dealers being the you know, essentially being a cartel and then da 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 da.
Only because they
it's
are.
True. Yeah. Well, it's true. However, the what people don't ever want to talk about is that yes, in exchange for getting them at the auction price, which you then can vend to your customers. Okay, so there's a spread there, which is really, you know, that's nice because that's free money.
Well, plus you get commission on both sides.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah. That's free money though, all right? I mean, it's a license to print cash. That's fine. However, there is no agreement with being a primary dealer at what price you will bid, just that you will.
Right.
All right. So,
well, it better be a price that you can unload it at or you got a problem.
Well, that's right. So you're never going to buy below the resale, right? That would be stupid. Right. So there's, you know,
above
I mean,
the resale.
Well, you're certainly not going to. Yeah. You're not going to buy. You're not going to take in something that you know you're going to have to vend out at a loss. That's not going to happen.
It may happen, but you're not going to do it on purpose.
Well, everybody screws up, Chief, but not intentionally.
No.
Okay. Right. So yeah, I mean, I think this is a very interesting time, and then, you know, of course we have election season, but the other thing that comes with this is that essentially blackballs the Fed from doing anything once we get to about June.
Well, but if the debt incursion on individuals and companies and states and whatever, states are going to start doing it again now since they don't have the COVID money. If that continues to go vertical, somebody's got to do something somewhere. I mean,
it's got to stop.
Yeah. Well. We'll talk about it on Tuesday. Have a nice weekend, buddy, down in Tennessee. S&P futures up 55. NASDAQ futures up 270. Yes! That's all I can say, Carl. Yes! Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
Short. Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.